Because nothing good happens without Margie and Priscilla, and I just have to thank them for everything they did. They are not responsible for us being in this room. This is our third choice room. Our first choice room was a much cozier setting in the Union, but I totally screwed that up. Our second choice was the room over here, and that one I didn't mess up. I have the reservation for that on my computer, but somebody else was in the room. So we're here, and it will work fine. What we're going to do today is we're going to begin in just a minute with a video that of Tom Reagan talking about Ray. We then have some words from Tom Adic, former chair who hired Ray, who can't be here. And then we're going to just open up the microphone for anyone who wants to share their memories of Ray. I'm sure we'll be laughing a lot, right? You couldn't know Ray without having wonderful stories. And then at the end, we have a couple surprises that I'll hold off on. Two requests. One is that we are doing an audio recording of this that we're going to put on the website so that Ray's sister Charlotte can see it and anyone else who wants can hear it. I misspoke. It's an audio. And even if it were video, when you come up to say something, please introduce yourself and tell us who you are. And because the people who listen to this, many of them won't know who you are. Secondly, if the acoustics in this room are quite good, Jim, you don't have any trouble hearing me, do you? And I'm not yelling. But if you feel you're soft-spoken, and we do have a mic up here, which you are more than welcome to use. It's on, and you can just pick it up and it's on. And use it. So we're going to start with this video by Tom Reagan. And we probably want these down. You think that's dark enough?
I met Ray at the University of Virginia when we were doing graduate work together in the late 1960s. This was before our mutual interest in animal rights surfaced. We often debated one another on that topic. When I went first, I described Ray as the second best student to pass through UVA's graduate program in philosophy. When Ray went first, he described me in the same terms. Tit for tat. That's how deep our friendship was. Two things you might not know about Ray. First, when animal exploiters described me as the Jim Jones of the animal rights movement, or when they endeavored to implicate me in the commission of serious crimes, including the crime of murder, Ray would have none of it. In the immortal words of F.H. Bradley, Ray would stand and say firmly for all to hear, "Stinking fish." Second, because of his near Cartesian view of animal minds, Ray was for a time viewed as the long-awaited philosophical messiah on the part of animal exploiters, biomedical researchers in particular. They proved to be mistaken when Ray put all his utilitarian cards on the table with full complement. Not only were seriously mentally enfeebled humans at risk, they actually made better subjects for biomedical researchers. And allegiance to Sarah and Grace, ascendancy to the status of the philosophical messiah on the part of biomedical researchers was short-haired. Of course, one thing we all knew about Ray, he was a marvelous storyteller, a wonderful storyteller. Did he sometimes exaggerate? Did he sometimes embellish? Well, yes, but on his view, I think, what was respect for hard facts compared to a good belly laugh? So my final tribute to Ray, and I know what I am about to say, he would say if our roles were reversed, R.G. Fry certainly was the second best student of the graduate program in philosophy at the University of Virginia. I will miss him profoundly.
With that as our start, it's my pleasure to call on Michael Weber. I'm sure all of you have met Michael, our wonderful chair. And he has some words from Tom Adick, the chair who was instrumental in hiring Ray back in the mid-80s. Michael, thanks.
I don't have to introduce myself then. But I do want to second Lou's thanks to Margie and Priscilla. I see Priscilla there. As he said, nothing good gets done without them. I also want to thank Lou. Lou really took the lead on this, and it's been a wonderful event. I think we should give him a quick round of applause. So these are comments from Tom Adick, who was on faculty here from 1972 to 1995 and suffered being chair from 1983 to 94. I'm proud to say that it was on my watch as department chair that Ray Fry was hired to join the faculty in 1986. Ray was a well-received visiting professor in 1984. 2 years later, we were on our way to winning approval for the world's first PhD in applied philosophy and had secured permission to add another senior faculty member in applied ethics to fortify our case. Ray had been teaching at the University of Liverpool for a number of years, but it seemed possible that he would be willing to return to the U.S. where he was born and raised, and also his aging father lived in nearby West Virginia. A crucial part of the persuading fell to me. Ray and I met for dinner at a quiet restaurant in London to talk through the details of a possible offer, living and working in Bowling Green, hopes for the PhD program, his prospective colleagues, and the like. We talked quite animatedly through a long, leisurely meal, drawing the attention of our waiter as we did. I expressed concern about Ray's possibly using Bowling Green as a stepping stone to another American post after a short stay. He assured me that that was not his intention. Eventually, he was firm in agreeing that he would stay at least 5 years, or as long as I remained as chair, whichever was longer. Toward the end of the evening, we had pretty clearly, to me at least, reached a meeting of the minds, and I felt confident that I would be returning to the U.S. with a firm commitment from Ray. When I returned to the table after a visit to the men's room, Ray leaned over the table toward me and said, "Tom, I want you to know that the waiter over there came to speak to me while you were away. He claimed to be a keen observer of human behavior, and he expressed concern about the way you were obviously negotiating with me and wondered if I thought you to be someone I could trust on the details we have been discussing." I looked at Ray with a bit of a smile, hoping for one in return. Receiving none, I looked at the waiter, who was not looking my way. Looking again at Ray, his delight in my anxiety was clear, and he responded with his impish smile and a wink. We parted shortly thereafter. Much to my relief, Ray happily joined our faculty several months later. I delighted in working with him as long as I remained chair. But neither of us would ever forget that London dinner. Ray would not allow it. At times, I had to ask him to do things for the good of the department, and he always came around to agreeing. But before doing so, Ray would ask me invariably to recall how that London waiter had cautioned him about me. I can still hear him saying, "I should have listened to that good fellow." I can see him shaking his head, sighing in resignation, or even pounding his fist. Sometimes this went on for quite some time, and then the impish smile. 5 years passed, I was still chair, and Ray had not left. 9 years passed, I resigned as chair to take my early retirement, and Ray remained. Ray was a big part of what made it wonderful for me through those last years at Bowling Green. Not only was he great fun and easy to provoke to laughter, but he was an able philosopher, a terrific colleague, and a superb mentor to so many graduate students. He holds a prominent place on my list of the unforgettable characters I have known. This is something I hope and trust this is a place he has for many of you as well.
What John is saying is, let's stand closer here, and he'll hear better. This is Lou Katzner. I get to start off with one of my fondest stories of Ray. What many of you know, some do not, is Ray arrived here with a well-worn electric typewriter, not one of those big, huge ones, but the portable ones. And according to Margie, he was the fastest typist on the earth. He could type at an unbelievable speed. Well, just about the time Ray arrived, computers were put in every faculty member's office. And there sat Ray's untouched, gathering dust. And every 6 months or so, Margie would say to Ray, "Don't you think you ought to use it?" No. So in many ways, I wouldn't describe Ray as a Luddite, but he was slow to move into the computer age and eventually got around to it, and then, of course, could not understand why somebody else who wasn't using a computer could be so stupid, right? I mean, that was just Ray's. Well, the story has to do with cell phones, because Ray was slow to embrace a cell phone. And just about everyone had one, not Ray. And then one day, I called Ray. And the number I had turned out to be a cell phone. And the first thing he said to me was, "Hey, Katzner, I don't usually talk to people who don't have iPhones, but I'll make an exception for you." And every time I called him, some version of that came up. I did eventually get an iPhone, but unfortunately, it was too late. But you couldn't talk to Ray without laughing, and that's one of my fondest memories. So, the floor is open. Please introduce yourself. Stand as close to this as you can, and maybe peek towards the mic so we'll have good reception.